Welcome, everyone. We're at What's on Wheels, and today I have two very special people in studio with me, Mr. Gary Scott and Mr. Greg Kress. I'm not going to go into your biographies because we don't have time to discuss it, but these two gentlemen have been engaged in EVs for a long time, actually probably even longer than me. So that's saying something. And they together between them wrote a guide to EVs. It's a buyer's guide. Am I right, guys?
Well, probably buyers, but maybe even people have just bought. So not before you buy, probably a bit of both. Sometimes people get so caught up in the buying process that by the time they actually get the car, it's like, oops, what now?
It was great. Now what?
Yeah. Now okay. We need a user guide.
Right. Okay. So the user guide basically, as far as I understand it, covers the basics of what it means to own an EV. Yeah. And of course, you know, I think it's such a valuable tool because we've been involved in it for so long that all of this stuff is bloody obvious to us. Yeah. But every now and then on the LinkedIn feed or wherever, you get a question coming up and you're thinking, how can you not know the answer to it? It's such a basic question when it comes to EVs. So I think in terms of a user guide and how these things go, it's of immense value. What do you think is the biggest sort of obstacle or the biggest area where people don't understand what it is that they're buying or how it all actually works? And that's a big open-ended question, I realize.
That is. I mean, I think there's probably four or five, but the very first one is, where am I going to charge and will it work? Assuming that you haven't done your first charge at home or your dealer hasn't delivered you a full charge, as soon as you start to think about the charge running out, it's what is this, how's this going to play out? Where is my nearest charger? Yeah. How do I find out where that nearest charger is? Will it plug into my car? Just will it work? When we've been fueling at a petrol station our whole lives, it's almost like a mindless thing, an unconscious thing. We just go, we pay our money, someone fills it up for us, and we drive off. Mm. Now it's suddenly an active thing.
Yeah, and I mean, it's almost, how much does it cost? What is it going to cost me? And how far can I go? Yeah. Other areas that come up a lot. So it often is a bit of a learning curve, even for those that are transitioning or starting to do the buying research to go into the user research. It's not a natural step. You might not understand what a kilowatt hour actually is and how far that gets you.
Well, that was the actual question that was asked, is what is a kilowatt hour?
Yeah.
I was kind of like, what's a kilowatt delivered for an hour?
Yeah.
Yes.
What's a kilowatt? A kilowatt is the same thing that you have in your petrol engine, mate. You know, it's kind of like if you have a 100-kilowatt engine and you use 100 kilowatts for an hour, you've used 100 kilowatt hours.
It forces us to go back to primary school
science. It does.
Science.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is energy? What is work that comes from energy? Yeah. What is power equals current times voltage? You know, these are what I call EV maths equations that everyone needs to take a bit of a learning curve through. But once you've got it, you've got it. And then it becomes very clear and very obvious and what to do.
If you just think of it as, because not everyone did science, and certainly I did it 400 years ago and would probably be dangerous. If you just think of it as juice, right, electric juice, and you're using 16 to 18 liters per 100 kilometers, that sounds like heavy on petrol, but it's the cheapest petrol you're going to buy.
Yeah.
So now you think it's 16 liters of petrol at probably 1/6 the price of petrol. And then you're probably okay. I'm going to use 16 of these things every 100 Ks, and I've got a battery that can carry 70 liters.
My tank carries 60 or 70 juices.
Okay, so now I'm probably 400, 450 kilometers. And so that starts to feel a bit more intuitive.
I like the juice idea. I like the juice idea. It reduces complex mathematics to simple concepts that we can understand. Right. So if you reduce electricity to equivalent of petrol, it's in essence the same thing. I mean, it's basically, you know, your source of energy is different, but it's a unit that you're plugging in.
Correct.
And you have a capacity of how many units your car can actually max out at, and that'll be your battery capacity.
Hundreds.
And depending on how many units you'd use per 100 kilometers will tell you how far your range is.
Yeah.
Here you go, guys. We solved it easily. Done.
But back to Gary's first point is, where do you get your juice from? Is also the fundamental question, because you know, we used to getting it from the fuel stations, but now with an EV, you have got a multiple set of new choices and locations to actually obtain your juice. So it could definitely be your home, and that's the most practical thing for most people, plugging in overnight.
Yep.
Or if you are lucky enough, you've got solar and you're at home on a work day, you can charge during the day at peak solar, take all that excess solar energy, put it into the EV. Or you could be at another destination. Could be your work, could be your office park, could be shopping center, could be a hotel.
So it's an extremely valid point because, you know, I've tested a couple of EVs. I don't have EV charging at home. I just plug it in with a 3-pin plug that comes with the cars just to test to see how many Ks and things I can add on overnight with it. And you can get a few if you plug it into your 3-pin plug. You know, it actually does work.
Yeah.
But the one thing it has forced me to do is to figure out where my nearest fastest high-speed charger is. And thankfully for me, it's 3 Ks down the road at a hotel in the West Rand. So it's West Rand. I mean, I have to cross over the border into the West Rand. Mm-hmm. So it's, anyway, and so that's, as long as that's on, you know, there's no load shedding, whatever it is, it's always available to me. I mean, if there's an extra car there, you may have to, it reduces your charging. But it does tell me where my local charging points are.
Mm.
And I think once you actually own an EV, once you start driving around, there are millions of them around, actually. You know, you pop up your app and you can suddenly see there's a grid cars one there or an electric car or whatever it is. You know, you've got Rubicons and this kind of manner. Yep, so there are actually quite a few and more coming all the time.
Yep.
But you're right, that's public charging. So public charging is going to cost you an arm and leg, but it's still, 60% cost of petrol?
Yeah, and getting cheaper by the day.
It's cheaper.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. And when we say 60% cheaper than fuel, it's not because the juice is cheaper. It's your per 100 Ks is the actual, your net running costs are much, much lower. Then when you're at home, it's 25% of fuel and getting cheaper?
25% probably just off the grid and even less if you're on
solar. And if you're on solar, then whatever kilowatts you get from that are free. In terms of trying to offset the enormous differential between the capital cost of buying your car versus the equivalent ICE, this is obviously a major sticking point. You know, when you're paying an extra 100,000 Rand for an EV derivative of the same version of an ICE, you know, that's a lot of running costs you need to amortize if you're going to make a financial conclusion to why you want to purchase an EV as opposed to me who wants one because of the performance. I don't care about the financial side of things. Well, I do because my wife won't buy me one. But the financial side of things is obviously important to a lot of people. So with the enormous capital outlay that one makes on these things, your running costs amortized over typically 30,000 Ks a year if you did that. How long does it take to sort of recoup your costs, assuming that you're using home charging as your base?
Every car is going to be different. And so I think one of the insights for motor retail is that you're moving away from just selling a product off the shelf, which is what a normal car is, because we tended in ICE to move towards a fairly efficient space and fairly intuitive. It's similar to the last car I had, maybe slightly incrementally better, to a brand new world. And so you're now moving into an engineered solution. What are the three or four cars I'm selecting from versus the ICE that I come from? And what is my application? Not just about consumption, but around daily usage. Mm. So if I do 500 Ks a week, but it's spread over 7 days, I can happily charge, slow charge every night.
Yeah.
If I need to do 500 a day, I'm going to be under pressure.
Yeah.
Because I miss one charge, I'm going to be off the road for
a day. To find a public charger.
So I don't think there's a short answer to that. I think, you know, the other thing we're not going to know for a period of time, you know, even with ICE and with 50 years of history, you can't guarantee a residual in the future. I'm not talking about a bank structure, but you cannot guarantee the future market value. And that's very true in the EV space. You know, technological obsolescence might play a role.
Mm-hmm.
Oversupply, undersupply might play a role. We just don't know.
Let's pick up on technological obsolescence there, because it is something that creeps into conversations all the time. And I a bit of the ignorance I see around EVs is the fact that they are technologically sophisticated.
Yes.
I dispute that. I don't think they're any more technologically sophisticated than your conventional ICEs these days. I mean, ICE engines or ICE-based cars have got a huge amount of tech in them.
Yes.
EVs have the same amount of tech. It's a drivetrain change that's different. And maybe the technological concerns people have actually revolve more around the battery tech than the actual tech in the car itself. And in that, I mean, what are your guys' views in terms of battery life and concerns around what it's going to cost to replace my battery should something go wrong?
I think I think there's a misnomer about, or misunderstanding, misconception, if you will, about battery longevity. And to Gary's point, I mean, we've only really seen a market develop over the last 15 years in terms of EVs, whereas the ICE vehicle equivalents have had more than 100 years of data to produce. Yeah. These last 15 years, if you look at the early Tesla Model S's that were launched in 2011, 2012, I mean, those are now reaching, some of them, 350,000, 400,000 miles. Mm. And still have a battery state of health probably around 85 to 88% in that window. So it's starting to prove that even the early technologies are actually quite robust in terms of lasting a long time.
Yeah,
we are seeing more technological disruption in battery technologies now than you know that we have seen in the past few years because new chemistries keep coming out.
Exactly.
So we have lithium NMC at the moment, so nickel, manganese, cobalt. We also have LFP, lithium iron phosphate, which are a little bit less energy dense but a bit more cost effective. CATL have just announced they'll bring their first sodium ion battery out by the end of the year. And then there's this big wave behind that around solid state batteries. And
so is Donut real or not?
We're hearing big claims from startups and companies. But even if it isn't real, what I'm interested to see is how it pushes the big names to work faster and actually get that R&D cycle even moving quicker. So there isn't a world where I can say that in 2 years' time, the battery's going to die, that you've just bought in your new EV, and you're going to have to replace your battery.
Yeah.
You will most likely have had to have replaced your gearbox way more times than your battery.
I can't think of a manufacturer at the moment that offers a battery warranty of less than 8 years.
8 years, yeah. As the years creep up, they'll up that to 10 years because they're seeing the data.
Yeah.
It might even go beyond that.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, you know, it's exactly what you're speaking to in terms of the Teslas, the early Teslas that are now coming in. You know, first of all, they have to have the entire braking system, well, the discs and pads replaced because they've just never been used. They've actually fallen apart from lack of use.
Right.
Which is interesting. And second of all, the battery, as you say, the battery life has been vastly underestimated by the OEMs in terms of actual practical day-to-day usage. So I think the OEMs have done the right thing by being conservative and saying, we guarantee this battery will last 8 years, 500,000 Ks, whatever it is, where in actual fact it'll last 16 and do a million. Yeah. But they're being deliberately conservative. And that's certainly being borne out by the data as it's starting to manifest itself. And as you say, I mean, EVs have only been around for 15 years, but in all honesty, they've only really hit their mark in terms of sales, in the last 5, 10?
5 or 6 years, yeah.
So we're seeing a rapid ramp up. And speaking of rapid ramp up, I'm bashing my mic around here, so excuse me if there's a bit of noise coming through. Speaking of ramp up, where are we in South Africa in terms of our tipping point for reaching EV sales? Given the kerfuffle that's been happening in the Far East and the sudden interest in EVs that subsequently driven into the South African market, when do you think we're going to hit that? I think it's the magical 5% of new car sales that establishes traction.
I have a view. I mean, I think we're going to have a bit of a supply shock here. So I think if you look particularly across the premium sector, there's probably been a lot of aging stock, aging demos that were discounted and that got some movement going. What the shock has done is cleared out the cupboard.
Yeah.
Annoyingly. So now you've created demand.
But you've left a hole.
And you've left a hole because where's the next ship coming? And so now people have to, and unfortunately that's also going to delay retailers getting interest in it because I want profit now. I don't have anything to sell. So, you know, I have what I sell and I sell what I have. If I don't have it to sell, I'm not going to get excited for a while.
Yeah.
So I think that's a little bit unfortunate, but I think it has switched the conversation on, like completely. It's mainstreamed the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the oil shock around the world has been a shot in the arm that the EV industry has been almost waiting for, indirectly, because you're right. I mean, the interest in say, the mid-categories is starting to pick up. But it's the under 400,000 rand category
that's the key.
That is really going to be interesting to watch now because it's a well-known fact that in South Africa, around about 60 to 65% of vehicles bought are under 400,000 rand. Now you're going to have about, 4 or 5 EV models available in that segment. And they don't come with an ICE vehicle equivalent.
Yeah.
There isn't one.
That's right.
So it's a choice of this one or not. But on all the groups that I'm on social, I try to just keep a pulse check on what's happening. And there are thousands of people that are joining these groups now, asking these questions, buying the cars, showing the cars they bought, doing road trips around the country. It's absolutely exploding on the ground. And it's reflected in NAMSA's numbers as well. In March, I think there were just over 280 BYD EVs sold. I'm not even talking PHEVs or hybrids. Just the
BEVs, EVs. Yeah.
In May, that went up over 300.
Yeah.
So if you combine just BYD's market share, which is the leader at the moment, with the others, you're probably looking at around 500 maybe being sold a month now.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole of last year, the only reported number was 1,257.
That's right.
In total. So we are on track to blast past, I think, about 5,000 EVs sold this year if this current trend continues. And the 5% inflection means we need to be selling 2,000, or there need to be buyers for 2,000 EVs a month in South Africa to really change that inflection point.
So we're approaching it quickly. If we hit 6,000 this year, which is my prediction, Greg, you owe me a beer.
Happily.
And Gary will pay. Okay, so I think that speaks to the prescient timing of your report. So we'll put a link into our video where folks can go and read it and download it and digest it. What do you think is probably the most important takeaway? I know you said we fought 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 10 different points that one needs to cover.
Yeah.
But what's the most important thing for a prospective new vehicle buyer to have in mind when considering whether they're going for ICE or going for EV? What do you think is the most important influencer or
start with your trigger. Why am I in the market in the first place? So don't fall in love with technology for the sake of technology because it's the latest shiny gadget.
It's shiny. I want it. It's new, bright. That's why I buy it.
Why am I in the market? Is it because it's just time to change my car and I want to future-proof? Do I have anxiety about fuel supply? Is it an economical thing? Have I driven an EV and found the driving experience from a smoothness perspective to be good? And make sure you tick that box. Everything else will be, there are at least 5 or 6 other things that will be great. But there are going to be 1 or 2 things that are initially going to feel a little bit painful.
Sure.
And if you haven't been clear on, ticking off that one thing that is moving you forward, then that pain is going to feel more painful.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say go into this with an open mind. Go into this with a level of excitement about something that's really going to change the way you actually perceive mobility to start with. It's almost like back in the day when people started burning candles to get light in the room.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the light bulb was invented and you could use this other thing called electricity to get the same function. You could wean yourself off candles and go towards lights.
Yeah.
Same thing happened in telecoms in 2007. We were so used to typing on a keyboard on a phone. Multi-touch screen came out. And suddenly you were having to make this jump to using a different interface.
Mm-hmm.
But it soon became natural. Mm-hmm. And I think this is just another example of that transition for people to go through. So open your mind and be excited about it because it really can make an impact not just to your budget and your costs, but to your enjoyment of life, and just enjoying driving again.
100%. My take on it is, as always, if you haven't driven an EV, don't tell me that they're rubbish.
Yeah.
Because it's just not, the case, yeah. And honestly, the thing to people who are EV reticent, I guess, is just they haven't driven one.
Yeah.
and that for me has been always the key thing.
That's the playbook for retail.
Yes,
100%. We've downplayed over the years bums in seats, right? It's a commodity and we're just negotiating a price. Put the person in an overnight test drive. Invest in your demos. Your demos are your silent salesman. They'll do the job for you.
100%. Vince, I thank you. We'll leave it there. Thank you very much for coming in. And if maybe we can get you in on a second occasion to further advance the discussion, because I think there's a huge amount of ground to cover in this space. I would be most grateful. But thank you for coming.
Absolute pleasure.
Let's check in on that prediction at the end of the year.
Yes, absolutely.
Good stuff.
Cheers, all. Thanks. You.